Podrick.
Is it really going to be sooner rather than later? Welcome back to the show, everybody. Or welcome to it, 9-11 here on a Monday morning. J.R. Simmer and Hammer with you, soon to be joined by Eric Macromello. That was U.S. President Donald Trump on Saturday afternoon responding to some questions from reporters because he had spent some time earlier in the day chatting by phone with the commissioners of pretty much every sport in North America. From the Big Four, as we would call them, well, Big Five, I guess, if you include Major League Soccer as well, to golf, to NASCAR, to IndyCar, to Dana White from UFC, Vince McMahon from the WWE, and apparently, according to those people that talk to people who are in on that call, that Donald Trump, talked about the importance of getting sports back, but timelines mentioned. He said he wouldn't mention it there or wouldn't talk about it there. He doesn't want to have a definitive date, yeah. But August or September is maybe dates we're looking at now.
Well, I think you're entering into society, and if you're in New York or anybody else, if you're a sports league, I think how you term it has to be awfully careful, right? This idea that you're even thinking about sports for most people in New York City is the last thing on their mind. So you want to give a little bit of hope, but at the same time, I think be as vague as possible because quite simply, hey, nobody has any idea when this is going to restart.
But when has Donald Trump ever stopped, you know, just being definitive on anything or throwing anything out there? You watch any of his press conferences now, right?
But he's number one on Facebook. So, yeah. You know, those things are very important. And Bachelorette.
Just ask him. Yes, exactly. I got higher ratings than the Bachelor finale, for goodness sakes. All right. Joining us to talk about what transpired over the weekend and what is to come, we welcome to the show. You hear him as the host of Offside, heard every Wednesday night here on TSN 1200, our TSN legal analyst. We say good morning to Eric Macromello. How are you, Eric?
I'm good. Sometimes I wish Donald Trump would walk into a group of teenagers and start licking their faces, but yeah. That's just me.
That's just, indeed, yeah. No, now, how is working, you're a practicing lawyer, very busy practice you got going on. How is work from home?
Work from home is, it is what it is. I've got two young kids, 6 and 3, and that's the challenge because they always need something. It's like dating a really needy girl, but you're dating two really, really needy girls at once. I work in the morning. Emily, who also works, she's a lawyer as well. She works in the afternoon. I take the kids out for bike rides. We play hockey in the afternoon, all that kinds of stuff. And, you know, you kind of get into a routine. And, I've got great kids. They're tremendous. At the same time, with no end in sight, I'm not really afraid of dying anymore, to be honest.
No,
with you.
No, I was gonna.
I'm
now,
just kidding.
Is your
not really?
Yeah, yeah. Is work as busy for you? Like, do you have as much stuff coming in as you normally would, or is the law business like any other business kind of slow down a little bit?
Yeah, no, the law business has slowed down. I mean, I work with a lot of these major brand owners as well as small ones, and you know they have effectively really either slowed things down or put the brakes on. I have, a fair number of files and cases that are sort of residual work from before the virus and small work trickling in, but there is no doubt that the workflow has been reduced significantly. I'd say on a scale of, let's say I was at 100 before, now we're down to about 10 or 15.
Wow.
Which
wow.
Honestly, I mean, given the circumstances, it would be difficult to do, to carry a full workload. And also, realistically, guys, when you're doing this work, you can do the work, but then you become concerned about collecting on those bills as well. So look, I mean, everyone's in the same boat. We're all doing the best that we can. This will end at some point. I don't know when it's going to end, but, when things end, hopefully we can kind of just as a group, as a community and a society, just gather and move forward in a positive way.
And I know for that, Eric, you love doing your sports law class at Auto U. I guess use the technology in Zoom. I see we're on a weekly basis. You're having that. Has that been a nice little outlet during the break?
Yeah, that's such a good point. Yeah, so I teach sports law at University of Ottawa Thursday nights from 6 to 10. We have all 21 students up on my screen on Zoom. I looked into Zoom the night before the first class post-virus, and really easy to use, and it was amazing. The class ended last Thursday, unfortunately, although I'm waiting for their papers. So I don't have that human adult contact. So we'll see how that goes.
Why don't you invite all of us, all the good listeners, all of us who want to take the class? Hey, we're looking for something to do, too.
Well, I was thinking about this after the class ended because I'm so desperate to connect with other mammals. So, what would be so great is if we could use Zoom as a radio station and have, so my account has a cap of 300 people, right? And there's no time limit.
Yeah.
So we could kind of cycle through, every day you know, invite 300 listeners that have computers or iPads, which I think is everybody, and we could kind of do something. I think that would be a lot of fun.
I like that. Right? I like that idea.
And it's free.
Exactly.
That's the best part of the idea. It's free.
Hang on. Lawyer free? Does that go together?
We've been working together for nearly 10 years, yeah. I think, by now. I think, you know, that's the case.
Very good point. Eric Macromella joining us. All right. So on Friday, I think it was, the city of Calgary announced regardless of when sports is, you know, leagues may say, hey, we're going to play again, we're not allowing any crowds until the 1st of July. And I don't think anybody's under the impression anything's coming back before then anyway. We had the governor of the state of California talking about a September return of football saying, yeah, I'm not so sure about that. Eric, how will sports deal with these various jurisdictions, be they at a state level, at a city level, if we're talking about California and Calgary, where different states and cities have different timelines of when they're going to allow things to happen?
You know, what Simmer said coming into this segment sort of caught my attention. He said, you know, he was hopeful, and I'm hopeful as well that we'll see sports again this summer or even in the fall, but I'm not optimistic. As you mentioned, there are some states and municipalities that have passed laws or bylaws restricting public gatherings. Ontario is at 5 people. Miami-Dade in Florida is at 10 where the Marlins play. Texas is at 50. San Francisco is at 50. You can't have gatherings beyond those numbers. Here's the thing. The Leafs can say all they want that, you know, we're going to resume play. We're going to hit play in our season come July 1 or July 15. But it's not the decision of the leagues. They have to deal with federal laws in Canada and the U.S. They have to deal with state laws, provincial laws, municipal laws, county laws, and each of those laws provide that there's a restriction on public gatherings. And if that's the case, number one, from public gathering standpoint, it becomes an impossibility. You know, the NFL roster size is, what, 55? The NHL roster size is 23. If you have 2 teams playing, you exceed the public gathering limits in most of these states or in these provinces. That's the first thing. The second thing is, let's say you are able to assemble in a state or a city where that public gathering limit is not exceeded. Well, then the leagues, like the NBA and the NHL, they have to be hyper-concerned about liability here, about people getting sick and then, you know, getting seriously ill. So you have to be in a position to be able to test everybody every day in a location that is secure. They can't leave the location. They must be tested every day. And then you also need a test that provides or yields results, not within 4 or 5 days, but within 3 or 4 hours. And so if the league proceeds with something like this, which I don't see it happening, just given this is a logistical and legal nightmare, but if they would, you have to have a completely secure lockdown area, test everybody, not only test the players, but if you're going to hold games, right? You're holding games because as a league, you don't want to pay the networks back the hundreds of millions of dollars that they've invested for that month or 2 or 3. And so those arenas and stadiums are effectively television studios. You don't need fans in there, right? I mean, forget about having fans there. But, you know, so you have to test not only the NBA players, NHL players, the supporting staff, and then the networks have to send their employees in to have them, you know, manage the game from a network perspective. And they have to be tested. And so what happens if one of them has to be replaced and he ends up testing or she ends up testing positive, infects everybody? It's such a challenge, Yaron and Sean. I don't know how you feel about it, but I look at this from a legal standpoint and thinking to myself, this is like a law school exam question, which means like there are so many things that could go wrong that while I'm hopeful to see sports again, I am not optimistic.
Yeah, and to that, Eric, as you started any discussions, the National Hockey League, almost all their buildings are primary tenants. They also own the building. Let's go to the Staples Center in Los Angeles, and Anschutz family, who owns the Kings, owns the building. The Clippers and the Lakers are actually a tenant that are legally binded to play their games there. Would you not get into some legal issues where they say, hey, hold on here. You're not taking these games to Vegas. You're going to wait and play them in our building where you're a tenant.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are definitely some business considerations. I think those would likely go, Sean, I think maybe they would be considered secondary. I think the primary focus would be getting these games played anywhere, you know, even like on Mars, if that's possible, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think that that's the case. But then, you know, the other issue, Sean, is, okay, so you decide you're going to play these games in Vegas. Well, can you compel the players to come and play? Well, the answer is no, because this is a pandemic. It's a major global catastrophic event. And leagues cannot be seen as being negligent. That is, exposing the employees of each of these teams to a risk that is foreseeable, one that you can predict is going to cause them a problem. So the union has to agree as well. You know, now look, you know, players are saying, and I interviewed Jordan Binnington on my show, Stanley Cup champion. He was saying, you know, look, I want to get back and play, but want to get back and play and actually getting back to play, those are two entirely different things.
With Eric Macromelli, you brought up something a little bit earlier about, to my knowledge, if I'm talking about the winter sports now, about NBA and NHL, I think all the television money, the broadcast money has been paid to the teams. Do you think that part of the reason the NBA and the NHL in particular haven't announced a cancellation of this season is that the owners want to keep the money as long as they can and not
100%.
Have to pay it back?
Yeah, I mean, look, the NBA is not a sports league. It's a media league, right? That's your dream. Of the four major leagues in North America, the only league that's a gate-driven league is the NHL. So, you know, the NBA has this $24 billion deal across 9 years with ESPN and TNT. A significant portion of revenue is generated at the end of the season and in the playoffs. Media deal, the networks are going to want not all of the money back from a contractual standpoint. That's kind of hard to do, but a significant chunk of that money back. And so that's what the NBA is seeking to do, is try and put these games on in any fashion, because they recognize and understand if they can't get these games aired, a lot of this money goes back. And then let's not forget, the players in the NBA share in that basketball-related revenue. NHL players share in that hockey-related revenue at a 50-50 clip. So apart from the players, because there's also escrow in basketball. We don't talk about that as much, right? Apart from a significant part of their salaries being withheld, so for Steph Curry it'd be about $8 million, leagues are going to fall so significantly short of their revenue projections for the year that players may well be invoiced next season on their pay. That term is referred to as a reconciliation under the CBA, that beyond escrow, beyond withholding 14.5% of NHL salaries, which is going to happen, the NHL may well fall so short of the revenue projections, they're out about $275 million if the season stops now, that players may have to pay back additional money next year, right? Because they share in revenue. So you live by the sword and you die by the revenue sword, so to speak.
If you're the NBA, Eric, can you took the hit where the salary cap at the start of the season with the political issues in China, would they also look at this? And I know NFL's popular, but truly global as far as interest and play, would the NBA realize, and you know what, we got an opportunity here, even televised games without fans, our global reach could be a huge upswing in revenue?
I mean, the NBA looks to China, as you know, Sean, we've discussed it before, as a billion-dollar proposition. Their revenues increased 10% year over year. They're looking at about a 20% increase over the next few years, year over year. The leagues feel the pressure to get these games aired. The NBA feels the pressure to get these games aired. But ultimately, given the current circumstances, it seems like such a challenge to get all of this done. But my goodness, they look at China, and if they can get that squared away from a geopolitical standpoint, the sky's the limit, right?
Okay, you can't answer this question, nor can anybody science-wise as to you know, when people can come back and play games. But from all the legal angles you talked about, what do you think is realistically a best-case scenario as to when we could see games again, just from ironing out all the legal parts of it?
I don't like to say it. I don't think the NBA and the NHL resume their seasons this season. I think the NFL probably starts late. My guess is October or so. Maybe then we can see it. But this thing, again, is so unpredictable and so volatile. It seems to spread at an exponential rate. We'll see when it peaks and when that kind of crest comes down. But
right,
my guess is the fall, mid-fall.
That time. And when will we see fans, do you think, again?
Oh boy!
Is that potentially like a year away, if not more?
I don't know if you see fans until there's either a vaccine or there's medication that serves to significantly curb the side effects or control its spread. So that could take us into 2021.
Wow! Amazing. Yep, these are well, as we've said many times, uncharted waters. We're past the uncharted waters into we're into some sort of Milky Way of unknowingness right now.
And that's I think last night on ESPN that they re-aired the Rams Chiefs game, that 54-51 game that everyone loved.
Yep.
And it got 437 viewers, which is half of what an NHL Stanley Cup Finals game got on NBC, about 1.1 million, which is fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah. People are starving for it. But it's going to be a while before we see it. Always appreciate the insight, my friend. I'm sure we'll have many opportunities to chat down the road. Thanks for the time.
All right. Bye, guys.
All right. There's Eric Macromello, host of Offside. You hear it every Wednesday night, 6 to 7, here on TSN 1200. Joining us on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline, brought to you by Pizza Perks at Gabriel Pizza. Download the Gabriel Pizza Perks app and sign up today. We'll take a break. Noel Hoffenmeyer just signed his first pro contract. The 67th defenseman did. He's going to join us when we come back here on a Monday morning. Hope you're having a great start to it. You are listening to Sports Radio, TSN 1200.
This is TSN 1200.
To Jack Quinn, back to Hoffenmeyer. His one-timer, he scores! A hop bomb from Noel Hoffenmeyer, top corner, make it 7-0 Ottawa.
In the corner, Hoffenmeyer away from Winterton.
Turns, fires it towards net, he scores! Papasakis not expecting it.
Olscher in the corner, gets it ahead. Here's Marco Rossi, he's gaining ahead of speed. Rossi down the left side, has Hoffenmeyer with them. Rossi holds, Hoffenmeyer scores! First career OHL hat trick for Noel Hoffenmeyer, wins the game in overtime, 5-4-67.
Welcome back, 9:34 here on a Monday morning. JR, Simmer, and Hammer, the dulcet tones of Kenny Walls, taking us back to three of the highlights of a spectacular final season here in Ottawa with overager Noel Hoffenmeyer, who was in the news on the weekend as the 67s replenish through the OHL draft. It's nice to see a guy graduating out of the other end after a five-year career here. He gets himself his first pro contract. Noel Hoffenmeyer joins us this morning on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline to talk about it. Good morning, Noel. How you doing this morning?
Good morning. Thanks for having me. I just got to say, Kenny really nailed those off the start there.
There's nothing better than hearing your own goals described on the radio, right? And when you're playing in the games, you never hear it. So I don't know if he actually ever sends you the calls, but there you go. If you ever need a copy as your ringtone or whatever, just let us know and we'll send it along.
My mom might like that. I don't know if I could do that for my own phone, though.
All right. Well, listen, congratulations. It's unbelievable. You had a great career here in Ottawa. Before we reflect upon that, just kind of take us through your feelings after signing a contract with the Marlies on the weekend.
I'm really excited and I'm happy. I know this is tough times around the world right now, but for me to get good news like that and to be able to sign, it's really nice for me and relieving. So I'm really excited, and Toronto's my hometown as well, so I'm really happy I can stay home.
Noel, from a team standpoint, last year you lost to Guelph in the final. This year looked like you're on another run. I guess how tough was it to take? You didn't expect to be back as an overage, but to have the season you guys were having and all of a sudden to have it stolen away.
Yeah, it's never easy. Our slogan for the last 3 years has kind of been process and attitude, reward talent. And I think that last year we lost to Guelph in the finals, but we had a lot of players that returned and we learned a lot from that experience. And that was part of the process. I think we were going to bring a lot of what we learned last year into this year and we were going to have a great run. So it's really disappointing that we didn't get to finish it out, but at the end of the day, this is bigger than hockey, so.
With Noel Hoffenmeyer, the 67s, who signed a contract with the Toronto Marlies on the weekend. Take us through the process. You know, you were drafted by Arizona, didn't end up, getting signed by them. You go through your entire overage year, and as it comes to an end, albeit an early end, earlier than anybody wanted, kind of take us through the process of when the Marlies reached out and when you decided to sign the deal.
It happened pretty quickly, actually. It's kind of 2 days and we got it done. It wasn't a long process. Marlies are a great organization to develop and to kind of take points of your game and work on them and bring them to that next level. And they have all the tools to do that. And it was a great fit for me. I want to be able to take my game to the next level, and they have the great a great opportunity to do that.
A year later, Noel, how much better and bigger and stronger are you? And after putting up 82 points, how much more are you ready for the American Hockey League?
I think this year was huge for me. Having the coaching staff that we did, they helped me a lot preparing my game for next year and what the future was going to be after this season. Since they came in, they've been trying to get me to play that pro game, and I think throughout this year, again, my game got a lot better, and I improved and made strides forward.
As you kind of project yourself ahead next year, you've signed with the Marlies. What are your expectations of the difference between playing and especially in as a fifth year player in the Ontario Hockey League and now making the jump to pro hockey? What do you think that's going to be like?
When I was with Arizona, I was in Tucson for a bit at the end of one season. I got to watch some of the games and watch how fast the game was and how they took care of their bodies, how the players down there acted and prepared themselves for games. And I think that's going to help me a lot, kind of bring that to next year where I can kind of relate to it more because I've seen it firsthand how they acted and prepared themselves.
Does the dream now become earn an NHL contract with Toronto and ultimately play for Toronto in the NHL?
Yes, for sure. That's the dream starting now, I guess. It would be amazing to do that. So a lot of hard work is in between now and then, but I'm happy I can sign with the Marlies and get that started.
With Noel Hoffenmeyer. All right, so cards on the table. You grew up in Toronto. Did you grew up a Leafs fan?
I was never really a Leafs fan, but everyone around me was. All my friends were, and so I kind of always watched their games when I was younger, and my dad had season tickets, so I'd always go watch the Leafs games with my dad and my family.
Hang on, you're a hockey player. You're growing up in Toronto, and the Leafs aren't your favorite. Who is your favorite team?
My dad's a huge Montreal fan, and my mom's from Ottawa, and she was an Ottawa fan. So
okay.
My brother picked Ottawa, and I picked Montreal growing up, but...
Okay. Wow. Okay. All right. Well, now we know. I didn't know that about you. So you'd be the very rare, as you said, all your friends were Leaf fans. You'd be the rare guy that that was cheering for somebody else.
Yeah, that's mostly on my dad. He kind of got a little bit brainwashed into that, but I stuck with him throughout the years. So
gotcha.
Noel, what do you need to work on to not only the American League but to achieve your goal of playing in the National Hockey League?
I think a big thing for me is my skating. I think throughout this last summer working with Derek, I think my skating improved. But at the end of the day, it's something that can never be perfect and always needs work on. And I think that that's a big step that will really take my game to the next level.
So you're going through, you're trying to live a life like everybody else is right now, you know, staying at home and trying to do the best you can, and for you, trying to prepare to start your pro hockey career, hopefully in the fall. How are you able to like, what are you doing to sort of, A, keep busy, but B, to get yourself in shape?
The training staff with Ottawa, Sean Young and Derek Miller from Canadian Strength and Next Gen, they've been really good on that front. They've been sending us workouts and skills stuff to do at home, and they've been keeping us in line and keeping us up to date. And if you follow them, you'll be in good shape and you'll be ready for whatever happens. So I've been doing that, and it's been working out well for me so far.
What sort of a setup do you have at home as far as kind of an ability to work out either in the basement or the garage? Kind of describe what you've got.
The first day I was home, my dad wasn't too happy because I did something in the backyard and kind of tore up his back lawn a bit. So he hasn't really forgiven me for that yet. But
what did you do?
It was like a jumping workout that Sean gave us. So it doesn't require too many machines or anything like that. You can do it with kind of a box or something to jump onto, and not that hard to kind of make shift.
Right.
Over the 5 years here, Noel, how much, and no disrespect to the previous group, but how much did this program here in Ottawa improve to where it sounds like it flat out maybe the best in all of junior hockey?
Yeah, it's amazing. Before, it's a different culture now than it was before, and it's a little bit different outlook on on how it's run. I think that all three of our coaches now have had experience at a higher level, and they can relate to what they brought a lot of parts from the higher levels down to our system, and it really makes our organization a real world class organization. How the players are treated, how everyone's treated is fantastic.
All right. To wrap up, and now that Ottawa's in the rearview mirror as far as playing hockey here goes, to kind of take us through the time you came to town as a 16-year-old and you graduate as a 21-year-old. To tell us how your life has changed and kind of reflect upon your time with the 67s.
It's crazy how time flies. When I was 16 and I came in, the older guys would say, enjoy your time because it goes by fast. And being a young kind of cocky kid, I was like, all right, yeah, whatever. I've got 4 years here. I'm going to enjoy it. It's not going to go by fast. But then having it over now, it really does fly by fast. And it's crazy how quickly it goes by unexpectedly. My time in Ottawa was amazing. The fans were unbelievable. The way the city came around our team and kind of picked us up throughout the playoffs last year and throughout all 5 years was really fantastic, and it's something that I'll remember for my whole life.
Is there a lasting memory from your time here in Ottawa that you have, that when you think about when you're 50 and you got kids of your own, or 70, you got grandkids, when you think back to your time here in Ottawa, what will you think of?
I think it's pretty rare to have two OAs that spend all 5 years together, and before Hudson got traded too, he was here the whole time too. So just having 5 years with Austin Keating and being able to grow with them throughout those 5 years was something really special to me. And his friendship is something that I'll remember forever.
All right, awesome. Well, listen, congratulations. It's a great accomplishment for you to get started on your pro career. You, like all of us, are hoping that hockey returns in the fall, I'm sure, but you'll get on the ice at some point, somehow, some way. We'll be following along. Congratulations on a great career with the 67s, and best of luck in the future.
Thank you guys very much. Have a great day.
All right, you too. There's Noel Hoffenmeyer, signed over the weekend with the Toronto Marlies, a 2-year contract that, as he said, hopes one day will transform him and power him up to the National Hockey League. We'll take a break. Noel, as always, on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline, brought to you by Pizza Perks. Gabriel Pizza, download the Gabriel Pizza Perks app and sign up today. We'll take a break, come back with a final segment before we turn things over to Steve Lloyd, Graham Creech, and Steve Bunda on In the Box, coming up on TSN 1200. In Toronto.
Wow.
And the bathroom. if you don't follow us on Twitter, we'll tweet it out from the TSN 1200 account as well. The tile is all Montreal Canadiens color and design. That is when you think about how you would design, if you were a huge fan of a sports team, I think about like building out a basement, right? Where you got the wet bar and maybe got some flags and you can go the whole nine yards. I never would think about a bathroom as a place that I would really, really, really go like high end on.
No. And if I was a kid, I would have thought about Dallas Cowboys cheerleaders. And if the mom is actually a Sens fan, assumption there were no romantic Valentines in the bathroom, because I think that would make you almost throw up.
Yeah.
If you had to be of another team. And I guess I'd like to also see if you invited your buddies over that are almost all Toronto Maple Leafs fans, what kind of extra damage they might have done to your toilet.
Great point. Great point.
That is passion right there, to say the least.
No kidding. Yeah. And not alone in that. Yeah. But that's great for Noel. And listen, a terrific kid. I had the opportunity, I want to say either 2 or 3 years ago, to go in and kind of speak to the 67s about kind of dealing with the media or whatever, as myself and Terry Marcotte. And, I don't know a lot of the players intimately, like Kenny would know them from following them all the time. But at that point, I think Noel was probably in his second year or whatever. And you know how it is. It's 20 teenagers.
Yeah.
Two or three of them are completely bored, not paying attention at all. I'd like to think maybe about probably 3/4 of them were somewhat paying attention. And there's one or two in the front, like asking all the questions, really interested. And he was one of them. And I just remember the time going, okay, I got to remember at that point, he's just kind of growing into what would be eventually a great career here in Ottawa. But just had a gift of the gab, and you heard that right off the top, right, with the nod to Kenny.
Well, and you know what? For a hockey player, and part of it's him, part of it's his team, could be his agent, could be his family, you got to be a supporting cast, because the kids that all went through the OHL draft this weekend, for Donaldson, that's a 6th pick overall, there's the next kid that went in the ninth round, and you feel like for whatever you've let down the world, right? You're walking around, people are like, hey, did you get drafted or you didn't? And also when a kid like that gets drafted to the National Hockey League, when you turn 19 and a bunch of your buddies are signing, including a guy like Ball, who is now part of a featured trade, you become a bit embarrassed, and there's no reason you should be as long as you put the work in. It hasn't worked out for you. You stay the course. The next phase of this, he came back and had a hell of a year of an overage. Even Craig Button, and I don't think Craig, there's no reason for Craig Button on Twitter to throw stuff out there. He just thought this guy was an outstanding prospect. So that's keeping the process, keeping positive. And that's, I think sadly behind the scenes, guys, or JR, that's what a lot of kids go through, right? Like there's these times where you feel like you failed when there's nothing wrong. And you've just got to be around and stay the course and have everybody supporting you.
Yeah, and again, if you know, it's a little bit of a different circumstance if you're a highly touted first rounder and the organization is gonna prop you up as best they can because they want you to succeed. They've kind of stuck their necks out on the line a little bit, as it were, to make sure they made a good pick. You start getting, and Noel is a fourth round pick, but if you start getting down 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th round or whatever, at that point, everybody's got a different path. And we're going to see, some kids that were drafted in those rounds and signed, the vast majority, 95% of them, will never go on to long pro careers. And we'll see guys like Noel Hoffenmeyer, who is going to start on an American Hockey League contract. You'll see the odd guy who will actually kind of outperform that and eventually sign with an NHL team. So I guess my point would be just getting your foot in the door is all you want at this point. And for him to be able to do that, I think it's a great stepping stone.
Well, it is. And for James Boyd, we couldn't go in depth, but I believe the year, I think it's about 6 or 7 years ago when they switched over to the under 18, was the first time we saw the trend of at a minor midget age, and I'm respectful of parents and you're trying to find the right path for your kids moving to Toronto. Just for that reason that they weren't being looked at enough here in Ottawa, or they went to the under 18, the incredible pressure that you put on somebody at that age where, hey, that path has been decided for you, right? And it's almost like everybody's looking for you to fail. So it's part of the learning curve, and there's certainly nothing wrong with some failure along the way for each of the kids. It's just really important to have that good group around you supporting you.
All right, 9:56. I mentioned that this is kind of, if you're a sports fan, kind of the saddest of weeks because of what might have been. Had sports been going with tonight would have been the final of March Madness, which is always terrific. And you don't get the one shining moment and the broadcast, which is always spectacular. And then Wednesday would have been the start of the Stanley Cup playoffs. And then Thursday would have been the start of the Masters. And I was reminded by more than a few people, you know what Thursday night was going to be?
Draft lottery.
Draft lottery was going to – the Sens were going to get the first pick in the draft on Thursday. Now, who knows? God knows when that's going to be, if there's even going to be a lottery. And if so, when is it going to be and how is it going to take place? And it's all going to be virtual. And we're going to have to follow along online some. And I did say the NBA playoffs are going to start this week, and they actually started the following week. So where it's super sad about what might have been, it's not quite as sad because the NBA playoffs wouldn't have started for another week. So we can feel much better about that now.
If we could get a Matt Duchene, because I feel like that last little draft lottery part as it pertains to most of our fan base, they really don't care about the Masters or the NCAA basketball. And the fact you gave a nice kick in the balls to end the show, a little Matt Duchene action would be nice.
A kick in the balls? There we go.
It's a kick in the balls for us.
There you go right there.